This episode of The Gendernaut is sponsored by Casper, who makes state-of-the-art mattresses at affordable prices.
My argument has always been that masculinity simply needs to be made emotionally healthy. I feel like all of the oppressive, awful shit that men tend to do to women, it's born out of men's own emotional dysfunction.
That is Mark Manson, and we're asking, is there a crisis in masculinity? On this episode of The Gendernaut, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host, my name is Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, but you can call me Naz, and we're trying to figure out gender roles for the modern era, so let's get stuck in. On this episode, we talk to the author and self-development expert Mark Manson, and we ask if there's a crisis in masculinity. We go into the problems of masculinity.
This is kind of the dark bargain of masculinity. It's like, all right, so go stand on the wall, risk getting shot at, run into burning buildings, bombs exploding, but don't tell us how you feel. We don't care, you know? And So, of course, you build up a population of men who basically just see the world through their own bodies and their own impulses, and see women for their bodies and their impulses. The two are directly correlated, I think.
And we talk about what needs to be done.
We need to decouple sharing emotion or sharing negative emotion with weakness.
So we're going to hear from Mark in a second. And at the end, I'll also be giving a shout out to a cool podcast called Details Please. But before then, here's a quick word from our sponsor, Casper, who make finely engineered mattresses at affordable prices. A good night's sleep is essential if you want to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Or at least I think it's pretty crucial to be able to enjoy your day and to get through it without feeling miserable and without being a grouchy person who's unpleasant to everyone else. Look, I know I'm not the only one who acts all mean after a bad night's sleep. Trust me on that one. So to generally be a better person, head over to Casper.com and purchase one of their state-of-the-art yet affordable mattresses. Now, Casper are able to slash prices as they sell their mattresses directly to you, the customer, and therefore there are no middlemen. Listeners of this podcast can get £55 off a mattress purchase by using the promo code KNOT at the checkout. That's KNOT. Terms and conditions do apply. Shipping and returns are free within the UK, and Casper also let you try the mattress out. They'll let you have a 100-night free trial where you can test the mattress out and see how you find it. And if you're not happy, you can get your money back. So head over to Casper.com, that's Casper.com, and use the promo code KNOT to get £55 off a mattress. That code for you again is K for King, N for November, O for Orange, and T for Tango. Okay, back to this week's episode of The Gendernaut. We have a special guest this week. I mean, all our guests are special, but this week's guest is someone whose work I've been following very closely for a few years now. And his work has helped me enormously in becoming a more fulfilled and happy and solid and all-round better person. Oh, and he's super funny, which means this whole process of self-development is enjoyable too. Becoming a better person while having fun during that journey is exactly what we're all about here at The Gendernaut. This week we speak to Mark Manson, the author of the New York Times best-selling book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is also a very well-known article that went viral a while back. You've probably read it and laughed hard at your desk at work or something. And he blogs and writes and talks about self-development. Mark used to coach clients one-on-one, and he's written about this and about coaching men, as well as talking about men's issues and women's issues, and he's done a lot of soul-searching as a modern man in today's world himself. So, given this podcast is all about untangling the new masculinity and femininity, and that there's so much debate going on right now in mainstream culture about masculinity, and especially about toxic masculinity, the problems of masculinity, and what needs to be done going forward, we just had to talk to Mark. It just made sense. We had a very in-depth conversation with Mark, delving into whether there's a crisis in masculinity and the main problems of masculinity today. Now, our conversation was really fruitful, and so we've decided to split it into a few sections, which we'll put out across a few episodes. This week, we're going to hear about masculinity in general and if there's a crisis. And in an upcoming episode, we'll hear about Mark's own personal journey, where he talks to us about a men's group that changed his life, men who've inspired him, and other things that have helped him out. So that's coming up on the Gender Not Soon. Now, I personally love Mark's work. It's insightful, it's raw, and it's real. I love it because it's so, basically, it's so masculine. And it's all the things I absolutely love about masculinity. The good parts of masculinity. The parts we should keep and have more of. That mix of being caring and curious and wanting to improve, and also being totally direct and straight down the line and no nonsense about it. Mark's writing is just so clear, so concise, so no bullshit, so not sugar-coated in any way at all. It's like a clear and yet caring slap to the face. I can remember several times when I read something of his and it sort of cut close to the bone and hurt for a few days, but that clarity and honesty and sincerity made me have to reassess a situation and turn things around. And let's face it, Mark is also insanely funny, which makes it all the better. See, personally, I have very conflicted feelings in these debates over masculinity because, on one hand, a lot of how we suffer in the world is due to the problems of masculinity and the rigid roles it prescribes to men, which end up emotionally stifling men and having them lash out on others. And we go into all this with Mark. It's a recurring theme that comes up on this podcast again and again. And yet, despite all that, I also really, really love certain parts of masculinity, and I think it's kind of saved me in a way. The best parts of it are all about this no-nonsense style of get up and go and just get things done the way they need to be done that, I'll be honest, has really saved me during some gnarly situations. And look, maybe that's just me. I've said before on this podcast that I had a very boyish upbringing and I'm close to my dad and I really wasn't into what I call girl school feelings culture. So this could just be me. But there's a lot of awesomeness in masculinity that we shouldn't forget. And Mark's writing really reflects a lot of that. He uses those really positive traits to bring out the best parts of masculinity while trying to reform the less good parts. Anyway, I'll stop going on and on. Here's Mark Manson on whether there's a crisis in masculinity. Just a quick heads up, co-producer Katie and I recorded this interview on 12th October of this year. That's 2017. I bring that up as Mark and I talk about the allegations against Harvey Weinstein, which were still very fresh when we talked. The two main articles which first brought up these allegations came out on 5th and 10th October by the New York Times and the New Yorker respectively. Things have developed a lot since we talked to Mark, but the bulk of our conversation still stands and is still very relevant to wider debates that are going on right now about masculinity. Okay, here is Mark Manson answering, is there a crisis in masculinity?
I think it's particularly confusing for men today because there's very conflicting messages they're receiving. So, you know, on the one hand, they're receiving the kind of the very conventional messages of be a man, be a tough guy, bang lots of women, et cetera, et cetera. And then on the other hand, they're receiving these kind of like post-feminist messages of being respectful and seeing women as equals. And so I think it's a very confusing time. I think there's always been kind of a crisis of masculinity. I think every generation of men has to kind of define themselves and they struggle to define themselves. I think that's true of women as well, probably. I think what's new is that we're finally living in an era where like there actually is potential for men and women to do the same things or to kind of flip back and forth between their roles.
So I'm just wondering, because when you say about men are also meant to be respectful and all these things, do you think we women play a role in kind of helping men figure out what their masculinity is, given that, like, you know, it's largely the role of women that is changing? And I wonder if that's kind of precipitating things being so confusing for guys.
We all look for role models, and we generally look for role models that are similar to ourselves. That's true whether you're man, woman, transgender, gay, lesbian, whatever. Like, we all look for people who are kind of ahead of us in life, who we identify with and kind of look up to them. And so in a certain sense, I mean, yes, women can influence men's behavior and I guess the culture of masculinity just through helping to define what's acceptable in culture in general. But I think ultimately other men and particularly older men play an outsized role. If you're like an adolescent male, you're not listening to your mother. You're listening to like the badasses on TV and the sports heroes and, you know, movie stars and politicians and things like that.
But then that's interesting because a lot of these men will have grown up in a really different cultural climate though, right?
Yeah. We're recording this when this whole Harvey Weinstein thing is happening. And you saw it with Bill Cosby as well. Like, we're in an interesting period where behavior that was acceptable, say, 20, 30 years ago for men or was deemed like normal is suddenly incredibly unacceptable. And a lot of these men, and again, they're always older men. They're all in their like their 50s and 60s and 70s. Suddenly it's stuff that they've been doing for decades. Suddenly they're being punished harshly for it. And so, yeah, I think we're in a little bit of a transition in terms of that.
What effect do you think that has on men your age or younger? And it's interesting when you brought up Weinstein, because like there's been all this controversy about younger actors who could have spoken up and they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of, you know, anger at that. So do you think that they are in a tough position where they're kind of looking up to these men from a different generation, but there's also an expectation that, you know, you've got to support the women, you've got to, you know, stand up for them?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the Weinstein thing, it's hard to get into it too much because, I mean, I just don't think enough details are known. I'm sure there were other men around him. Like, look, like if you've got a scumbag like Harvey, like guys like that tend to hang out with other guys like that. And so my guess is a lot of the men who were aware of what was going on didn't necessarily see a whole lot wrong with it, or they were kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it's like if you're a guy who's disgusted by a man like that, you're not going to end up hanging out with him much anyway, or your relationship with him is going to be strictly professional. And so you're not going to be aware of a lot of this stuff. So, you know, in the news right now, you're seeing a lot of like fingers being pointed and like, oh, this guy knew or that person knew. And that may be true, but it may not be. The overall point that's important is that obviously there were people close to him that were aware of what was going on. But I don't know how much of the silence about it was necessarily like a masculinity thing, like a bro thing, and how much of it was just like, these are people's careers. Like if you're a man who's working at his company and you see this going on, you know, on the one hand, if you say something, like your career is going to be destroyed and, you know, you probably have a family and a mortgage and all this stuff. So like, the people around him, both male and female, were like put in really, really horribly difficult positions. You know, the whole looking up to thing, I don't think there's any man out there who looks at Harvey Weinstein and sees him as something like to aspire to. Whereas I think you take somebody like Hugh Hefner, and, you know, Hefner's brand was very much built around getting men to aspire to be like him. So it's different.
So Hefner is interesting because we recently had an episode on Hefner and his vision of the good life and how that affected men. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on Hefner and his aspirational quality that you've just alluded to. Like, do you think that's still... Because the other reason I ask as well is because I remember Katie and I were talking with another woman and we were saying how we can't think of someone like Hugh Hefner in our generation. We're all sort of early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wondering if that is sort of on the wane, if that's like no longer cool, or I don't know.
I think it is on the wane, at least having kind of a male-dominated type thing like that.
What do you mean?
You know, if there's going to be any sort of like Hefner of our generation, I think it's not going to be like one dude with 20 women around him. I think it'll probably be one of these polyamorous California commune type things where it's like 10 women and 10 men and
gender fluid and everything, right?
Yeah, like, just every orifice is up for grabs. It doesn't matter who's. So, you know, Hef is like, he's a really interesting example. So like, I hadn't thought about Hef in like 10, 12 years. He's one of those people that I forgot he existed until he died. And it was really interesting for me because I remember he had a reality TV show back in like 2005, 2006, where it was him and like his three or four girlfriends or whatever. And they're always in the mansion and all these parties. And I remember watching that with my college roommates. I was probably 18 or 19 at the time. We were just like, oh my God, this is the life. Like, this guy figured it out. Holy shit. And then I forgot he existed for 10 years. And then he died recently. And I was reading all these articles about him. And I was like, wow, yeah, this guy was really scummy. Like, who would live like this, you know? And I think part of that is mature. Like, it kind of shocked me because my perception of him had done such a 180 in those 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I really started asking myself, like, okay, how much of this is maturity on the one hand? I'm sure some of it is. But, like, how much of this, too, is just, you know, kind of that transition I was talking about earlier with, you know, Cosby and Weinstein. Like, you know, they've been doing this stuff for decades. Now it's actually the culture has shifted enough where people are feel comfortable saying something. You know, I think with Hefner, like, it's something has shifted too, where I'm like, she sounds like a miserable existence, like scheduling your sex with, like, mm-hmm. all the women you force to live with you. Like, that sounds absolutely terrible. Like, who would do that?
It doesn't even sound very sexy, you know. It's not like, oh,
no. Not at all. And so, you know, he was a brilliant marketer, and I think he understood that classic masculinity, a component of, like, the classic masculinity, was basically women represented social status. Women were kind of like toys, I guess. I mean, not literally, but, like, they were for fun. You know, a beautiful woman was something that was you acquired, and then it was this fun thing you had. I think what's changed maybe recently is, well, clearly, like, Playboy has been borderline bankrupt for a while now. And I think part of that goes to show that, like, just men don't really buy into that fantasy the way they used to, or maybe they're more skeptical of it.
But the argument, right, is always the one I've heard is that there's so much, like, porn available online. Why would you bother to pay for something like Playboy anymore?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true, too. But it's funny because Hugh Hefner wasn't cool anymore. Like I said, I started reading these articles. I'm like, wow, this guy, what a douchebag. Like, I think if you talk to young men today, he wouldn't have this kind of heroic aura around him like he did, you know, back when I was a teenager. I think he kind of lost that. For young men, when sex is this thing that's so inaccessible, I think men blow it out of proportion in their minds. Like, it becomes this, like, hugely important thing that they're willing to, like, do awful stuff for. And maybe having porn so freely available and so many different types of porn, you know, like amateur porn and natural porn and cam girls and stuff like that, like, it removes kind of the mystery around sex, and men don't necessarily, like, worship it the way they used to. I've seen a lot of statistics that show that teenagers and uni students these days are actually having less sex than previous generations, and it's the first generation that's happened to in a long time. And a lot of times you see those statistics with a lot of people freaking out and saying, like, society's ruined. But, you know, part of me is like, deprioritizing sex for 16, 18 year olds, like, maybe that's not such a bad thing. Maybe they shouldn't be, like, so obsessed with it as they used to be.
So there's a lot of talk about redefining gender roles and what does it mean to be a man today and all that kind of thing. So when we look at traditional masculinity, what are the things that should go and what are the things that we should keep? Like, are there things that we're getting rid of that you think are really awesome and that people are just forgetting how important they are?
I don't think we're necessarily getting rid of the awesome parts of masculinity. I think they're just kind of going unnoticed right now. Like, I think people are just kind of forgetting the good parts. You know, the good part is the firefighter who runs into a burning building, the soldier on the front lines, police officer who's, like, get shot, you know. And obviously women can do those things now too, but it's still, you know, men make up the vast majority of those professions, and men are still by and large drawn to those professions.
You mean the protector, basically, that role?
Basically, yeah. There's always going to be a need in society for people who are willing to risk their own lives. And I think the good part of masculinity is that it encourages men to be willing to do that. You know, a lot of that stuff kind of goes unnoticed because we're so focused on, like, all the awful parts of masculinity, which there are plenty as well. I don't know if masculinity needs a whole makeover. I think it just needs... My argument has always been that masculinity simply needs to be made emotionally healthy. I feel like all of the oppressive, awful shit that men tend to do to women, it's born out of men's own emotional dysfunction.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of women, we feel that. We feel that we're constantly dealing with the consequences of men not being able to handle their emotions or not being given that space to be able to handle that.
you know, in ages past, it kind of, it might have even made sense. You know, I understand where that comes from, those social pressures on men. But yeah, I think that's the nature of the problem, not necessarily that men need to be 50% of this job or women need to be 50% of this job. Or to me, it's, you know, trying to define too clearly what the gender division of society should look like. I think that it's just impossible to do that. I think the best thing we can do is just make it culturally acceptable for men to behave like pursue whatever they want and for women to pursue whatever they want. And then also like provide the emotional tools for everybody to kind of cope with those decisions. The bigger problem for women historically has been they have not been allowed to pursue all the things that they've wanted to pursue. And I think historically the bigger problem for men is that they're not being equipped with those emotional tools to handle themselves and handle their relationships.
Mark, how would you describe an emotionally healthy male? I feel like we see so many examples of emotionally unhealthy males.
Oh, yeah. There's no shortage. The biggest thing that needs to happen, and this is something that I've always tried to do with my own work, is we need to decouple sharing emotion or sharing negative emotion with weakness. You know, so men are socialized from a very young age that you're not supposed to cry, you're not supposed to complain, you're not supposed to, you know, say something's unfair, you're supposed to get up, you're supposed to hit back, you're supposed to try harder. That creates a sense in a lot of men that simply a lot of their emotions, you know, things like sadness, guilt, insecurity, fear, like these are just completely unacceptable and that they need to hide them or repress them as much as possible. And this leads to all sorts of problems. And so I think, you know, what needs to happen is that, you know, emotions need to be made into something that's seen as strong. A man needs to be able to talk about his fears and not be ridiculed or called a pussy or, you know, looked down upon for it. Like there needs to be a way for men to process these emotions without feeling marginalized or feeling judged.
Because what I find interesting is I feel like when you don't allow someone to express themselves, you're kind of saying that they don't really matter in a sense.
Yeah, this is kind of the dark bargain of masculinity. It's like, all right, so go stand on the wall, risk getting shot at, run into burning buildings, bombs exploding, but don't tell us how you feel. We don't care, you know? And So, of course, you build up a population of men who basically just see the world through their own bodies and their own impulses and see women for their bodies and their impulses. The two are directly correlated, I think.
I want to dig into that a little bit because, and this might sound a bit weird, but I look at a lot of men around me and there seems to be like some sense of innate worthlessness in the way they behave. And I wonder if it does go back to this sort of like not really having your feelings validated from a young age.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at boys, how the typical boy is raised and how he's encouraged, like what he's encouraged for, he's not encouraged for his thoughts or his feelings. He's encouraged for how strong he is, how well he competes, if he's a good athlete, if he's accomplishes something in school. It's interesting because these are the things that women, like girls, miss out on to a large extent and it harms them. But at the same time, it's boys, this is all they're kind of encouraged to do. And so, yeah, I mean, boys are basically taught the value of your life is essentially just your accomplishments, like whatever your external accomplishments are. And so it's natural that men then, you know, once they're old enough to start having relationships with women, they see women through the lens of accomplishment. You know, how many women can I sleep with? How much control can I exert over my partner? Things like that.
What's really interesting is I was talking to a friend recently who has a son who's about 5 or 6. And she was telling me how she's trying to get her son to be really emotionally expressive and, you know, to raise an emotionally healthy son. And that he had come home from school and he was really confused. And he said how he had gotten really upset about something. And one of the other boys his age was like, "Why are you acting like that?" And he was like, "Because my mom said that I should express myself." And this other boy like looked at him like he was really weird. So I bring that up because I think this is a great goal for like men to be emotionally expressive and stuff. But with you yourself, how were you able to do that within the culture of men? Because, I mean, it's one thing to tell people, you need to do this. But I'm wondering how that gets received, like if there's even the space, or, you know, what are the first steps to being able to go on that journey without having it shut down?
Yeah, I couldn't do it until my 20s and I got into therapy.
Which is a good thing. Let's
encourage
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm laughing at myself, not because, you know, it required therapy. I'm laughing at myself because it took until I was like 25, you know, to even like be emotionally competent in a lot of ways. So there are a lot of kind of men's self-improvement movements. They tend to be very small and very obscure and a little bit cultish, and they make women extremely nervous because anytime you get a bunch of dudes in a room talking secretly, it's like bad things happen. I was fortunate. I found a group of men in Boston where I was living at the time where it was stuff like this was talked about and it was discussed. We read books about it, and, you know, I made some male friends. I would say it was my mid-20s was the first time in my life that I actually had male friends that, you know, encouraged me to open up. And if I was upset about something, to talk about it, you know, they wouldn't just roll their eyes and be like, fag, you know, like they would actually engage me, and I would engage them and encourage them. So like, it was hard to find a group of male friends like that, but I eventually did. But yeah, I mean, looking back when I was a kid and an adolescent, I grew up in Texas, which is like, as you can imagine, is not the most like progressive place in the world. And, you know, like my parents are generally like, I think they did their best and they did a pretty good job. My mom is very liberal feminist and my dad's very progressive, and they tried to communicate with my brother and I. It's just the culture there. Like, it was, if you didn't play football, like you were a loser. And if you complained or cried or something at school, like the guys would just beat you up mercilessly, like just kick the crap out of you all the time. And so you learn to just shut up and like not say anything and keep it all inside most of the day.
But Mark, I'm going to be a little bit devil's advocate here. Some of what you're describing though sounds a little bit like character building, because I remember my father telling me about this, about like, you know, when he was a kid and boys would beat each other up, and maybe he was romanticizing this or something, but he was like like trying to cover up the fact that it was deeply traumatic. I don't know, I should go and ask him. But he was like, in a way it's not bad, because it kind of teaches you that, hey, I can stand up for myself if I want. Because on one hand, like, I love hearing about like men being more emotionally healthy. But then on the other hand, like, I'm going to be honest, like, I don't know, do you really want people sitting around chatting about their feelings all the time? Like, I don't know if that's like really healthy. Like.
Absolutely not. Man, that it gets boring.
Right, exactly. So it's like,
I mean, first of all, I agree with you. Like, part of developing, and this is true for men and women, like, you need a healthy dose of adversity so that you can like learn how to cope with it. What I'm prescribing here isn't necessarily like removing adversity from boys' lives. It's more of like, let's look at the nature of adversity that children are having to deal with, because that's ultimately going to kind of determine where their self-worth comes from. So if you take a young boy and the nature of their adversity is that they get the shit kicked out of them every time they like show any weakness, then yeah, you're going to develop a boy that's like represses his emotions and thinks like violence is like one of the first options anytime like some sort of challenge comes up. So it's more of just like being very conscious of like, what adversity are we giving our kids, and like, how are we encouraging them to overcome it? I mean, if you look at a lot of other cultures, like, you don't see these same violent impulses as often, or you don't necessarily see like things play out in the same way, you know. So it is clear that there are different ways for a child to develop, I suppose, and there's probably healthier and less healthy ways.
You just talked about boys showing weakness and having that kicked out of them. Do we need to change what we define as being weak, though? Is that part of the problem?
Yes, that would be kind of a good way to sum up, I guess, what I'm saying is, like, we can't define weakness as emotions anymore. Like, weakness needs to be something else. It needs to be a lack of aptitude or a lack of perseverance or something else. Find some sort of like healthy way to define it other than just like, oh, he's smaller than me and he's like sad, so he's a little bitch and I'm going to kick his ass. You know, like, that can't be the standard anymore.
What would you describe as being weakness in a man?
to me, weakness in a man is the same as weakness in any person. It's somebody who's unable to take responsibility for their own problems and somebody who's unable to act on their own problems. Somebody can be physically very strong and very violent and very dangerous, and I still think that's a weak person, because rather than taking responsibility and dealing with their own issues, they're taking it out on the people around them.
That was Mark Manson, and we'll be hearing more from him again soon. He told us about a men's group that had a huge impact on him, and some other cool details about people and things that have really helped to guide him to where and who he is today. So we're going to hear all that on the Gender Not soon. Now, before we wrap up, I want to give a quick shout out to a really cool podcast out of the US. It's called Details Please. The mother and daughter duo Gail and Rose Reed talk about their lives and experiences and the issues of the day. Hearing them is like being a guest at their house, sitting down at the kitchen table over some coffee and tuning into their take on all sorts of issues that are going on in society, as well as their own life experiences. It's thoughtful and nuanced and really fun too. Last week's episode was especially interesting given what we focus on here at the Gender Knot. They talked about the allegations against Harvey Weinstein and the culture of sexual harassment at work. And it was really interesting hearing their experiences, which are from two different generations. Now, in that episode in particular, I really liked hearing some of Gail's wisdom, which seemed to be a lot about listening to your intuition and trusting your judgment. I bring that up as I think it's something that younger women really struggle with. You know, we're really raised to be forgiving and to give people the benefit of the doubt all the time. And I really liked Gail's take on really trusting herself. And I think it's an important one, and one that comes from life experience. Anyway, all their episodes are superb. You should subscribe to the podcast now. That's Details Please by Rose and Gail Reed. You heard from Mark Manson on this episode of The Gender Knot, where we asked, is there a crisis in masculinity? This podcast was presented by me. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short, and it was co-produced by Katie Vogue. We'll be back next Monday with more. And until then, you can check out more about us and our podcast at thegendernot.com. That's not with a K. Get in touch via our Facebook page or email us at thegendernot@gmail.com. We love getting your thoughts and feedback and ideas, and have been following up on quite a few of these. Please do take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. These help the podcast a lot. And we'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.